We will officially reconvene the meeting of the House Agriculture and Rural Development Committee. We started at 2:30 and went into recess. We will now call the meeting back into order. We do not have a quorum yet. As soon as we do, we will officially call the meeting to order and take care of some issues here. And members, just so you know, we do not have the bill before us. We have a copy of it here, but it's actually in an Environment Policy Committee right now. And just so members know, we will be scratching the item 5 on the agenda, House File 4116. David's relating to agriculture, creating task force to the University of Minnesota licensing, reducing appropriations. That issue, they've come to a compromise on that, so we will not need to hear that bill at this point. And just so members know, I believe it's next Tuesday, we'll be having an Ag Committee meeting on aquaculture, House File 4041 at 2:30, and the DNR and MPCA will be in on that one. There's some statewide issues as far as the way aquaculture is being treated in the state. Okay, so with those announcements, Representative Hoppe, if you could please come down, and I will not move the bill, but we will start to hear testimony. It would be my intention to go about a half hour for the proponents, a half hour for folks with concerns, just keep it even. And that doesn't mean you have to fill up that half hour, but I want to be fair to both sides. So as, again, I get the award for being the fairest chairman in the Minnesota House of Representatives, as awarded by the chairman of the Ag and Rural Development Committee. With that being said, Representative Hoppe, Representative Welty.
Yes, just a point of clarification, Mr. Chair. Looking at House File 4116, where is that going to go? I just want to know the track for that bill, because I do have apple growers in the district who contacted me about this actually just this weekend, and they were interested in your bill, and I was just kind of wondering, can you give me more specifics on the agreement and where it's going to go?
Okay, thank you for that question, and that's a very important issue that we're looking at there. And La Crescent, being in my district, I got a lot of phone calls, and I know you've got some apple growers in your district also, Representative Welty. I would ask later on here for Representative Erdahl, who sat in those meetings, I believe, all day, to give us an update as to what they came up with, because I don't know. I didn't sit in the meeting. I just had to hear there's peace in the valley. Apparently there's peace in the valley, but I don't know what that peace is. So if Representative Erdahl comes back later, we'll want to get an update from him. If not, we'll provide that for you later today, one way or the other. Because I don't know what we did. I just know we did a good job. Okay, so that being said, House File 3362, again, we will not be voting on this today, but I believe it's the intent of the author that this would be offered as a floor amendment. So I wanted the Ag Committee, since there's a lot of ag issues in this bill, to be very well aware of it, so that when, if it does show up on the House floor, the Ag Committee knows what's going on and can speak to it with some background. Okay, Representative Hoppe, welcome to the Ag and Rural Development Committee. If you could please present your bill and introduce your testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your time. And with me is Mark Johnson, the President of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. We will be brief. We won't take our whole half hour. I'll give you a quick thumbnail sketch of the bill and why I'm doing this, and let Mr. Johnson speak. He's more knowledgeable about this than I am, and then we'll stand for questions. In brief, I'm doing this bill. 2 years ago, the oversight of Cervidae Farms in Minnesota went from the Department of Natural Resources to the Board of Animal Health. At the time, I guess it was an oversight. No one ever thought to make this process legal, and so it's never become legal in the state of Minnesota. It's starting to happen now, and I have concerns with both the element of fair chase hunting and the possible importing of more disease, both chronic wasting disease and or bovine tuberculosis, into the state of Minnesota. I don't think in the long term that this is good for either the sportsmen or the agriculture entities in the state of Minnesota, and that's the essence of the bill. With that, I'll let Mr. Johnson from the Deer Hunters Association speak.
Thank you, Representative Hoppe, and we will officially call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. We've had some people have to go to some other committee meetings, so we'll officially call the meeting to order. Representative Hamilton moves the minutes of Wednesday, April 5th, 2006. Any additions or corrections?
No, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hamilton?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Good.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, if you please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yes, I'm Mark Johnson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association.
Welcome, committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. In front of you is a packet of letters. There's a letter on the front from Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. I believe the page handed them around. And also inside are other letters of support for a ban on big game hunting enclosures within Minnesota from various organizations. Basically, I'm here just to add some background to this. Minnesota Deer Hunters Association for several years, many years, has been opposed to big game shooting enclosures in Minnesota. Particularly in 2004, our concern came to a head with the production of CWD in Wisconsin, or the discovery of CWD in Wisconsin, and the potential of that to Minnesota should it get into our wild deer herd or should it be brought in through service here. As you're familiar, there have been a few cases of CWD in farm-raised deer and elk or service within Minnesota. And again, that's where our major concern is. We have been opposed to big game shooting enclosures from several different levels, but primarily the health issue and, of course, the ethical issue of whether it's fair chase, whether it's hunting or not. But at this point, our number one concern, again, is the health of the wild cervids, and that's where our membership is coming down. The front letter basically was a March 24th letter to Mr. Kelleher, our lobbyist, reiterating from our board of directors that our membership across the state had been talking to their boards, to their board members, and again reiterating that they were very much concerned about this issue and very much in favor of a ban of big game shooting enclosures. And I'm here to answer questions if you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. You were with the Deer Hunters Association?
Yes, I do, sir.
Is that the same Deer Hunters Association that opposes my bill for venison for the food shelves?
We oppose our, yes, sir. Our members oppose the dollar increase, but we love the program. We love to work with you on getting that
further. Serve the poorest of the poor and the neediest.
Our, however you'd like to put that, sir. It's an interesting bill and it's a great program.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Johnson with the Deer Hunters Association? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, as far as farm-raised cervidae, animals, you said you're concerned about bringing CWD into the state of Minnesota. Are the animals not tested, every farm-raised animal tested, when it is, well, isn't every farm-raised animal tested so we can be tracking CWD?
Mr. Johnson?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, sir, Hamilton, Representative Hamilton, sorry, tongue-tied here. Actually, every animal is not tested, and I think Paul Anderson with the Board of Animal Health will be testifying later. Also, there's some people from the DNR here as well. Animals that are killed or animals that die naturally that are 16 months of age or older are supposed to be tested for CWD.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the restriction lies at this point.
President Hamilton?
Okay. I'll ask that question to others.
Dr. Anderson? Or,
yes.
Okay, others. Okay, Representative Welty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, my question is, have you talked to your board at all or your membership about any compromise solution? As I understood it, you did come together, you were at the table, there was supposedly an agreement, but then later you didn't agree to that agreement. Can you clarify that, and then can you just answer whether or not you are at all open to considering any compromise?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, actually we did have some dialogue, informal dialogue. Myself, Tom Kelleher, our lobbyist, was also there with the cervid raisers, with the elk and deer breeders, or representatives thereof. I brought that information back to our board of directors and asked them that specific question, actually on March 23rd or March 24th, I forget which it was. And our board, because of the response they were getting from our members across the state, without dissent, said we are not open for compromise at this point.
Representative Welty. Okay, any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Representative Hoppe, do you have anyone else wish to testify on behalf of the bill?
No, I don't, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Hoppe or Mr. Johnson, Representative Pennis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a couple statements. The word slaughter in this committee doesn't have a negative meaning. I just want you to know that, because some of us realize, and we're old enough, I guess, that cattle came from wild something at one time. I also question detection and eradication of a disease in the wild. If you talk about some of the state-owned land which have some deer on them, most of them are on the farm during the daytime eating, but if you, you talk about a 760,000 acre state-owned piece of land, you can't eradicate anything. It's like people getting upset about the bill, I was out to shoot all the deer because of bovine TB. It's not possible. So, you know, we need to use a little common sense. As far as who supports and who doesn't support, I see the Cervidae farmer here as there not being enough to stand a chance. But, and I hunt deer. I'm all for the deer hunters, but I think we better analyze this one a little bit well.
Jim Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Pennis, I share your concerns. I have no problem with slaughter either. It's just the manner in we're doing it. And I think when the way you talk about chronic wasting disease or trying to eradicate that or bovine tuberculosis, that points out the problem.
Representative Pennis.
Thank you. I've had trouble shooting a pig in the head in a pan that's smaller than these, but nevertheless.
That pig just won't die.
No, they haven't.
Representative Hoppe?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. Now we have some folks that have concerns, and I'd like to split these actually into possibly two groups. One is, and we've got a Dr. Paul Anderson that I've got some questions for, and I think Representative Hamilton does, that really doesn't have a position for or against, I'm correct. Just for a minute, how many? I've got on my list. I have Dr. Paul Anderson, Dr. Glenn Zebarth, Fred Hubner, Don Olson, Jim Byrne, Holly Johnson. How many folks that I just read? Is there anyone else that wish to testify for or against the bill, or with concerns? We have a gentleman from the DNR. Who are you? An elk farmer. What's your name, sir?
Scott.
G-R-O-E-N. And then Ed Bogus. Now what I'd like to do now, members, and I have a Scott Gruen, Holly Johnson, Jim Byrne, Don Olson, Fred Hewitt, Dr. Glenn Zebarth, Dr. Paul Anderson, and Ed Bogus. If I could see a show of hands of those folks that are kind of here for information purposes, not for or against the bill. We got Dr. Anderson. And that's it. Let's go with Dr. Anderson now. If you could, I think there's some members have some questions for you. And Representative Erdahl, when Representative Welty gets back, I may take a break in for an update on the Apple issue. If you can kind of update us why we're not hearing that. You got it right there?
I just saw Representative Welty.
You talked to him?
Oh,
okay.
I just talked to him.
Okay, very good. Okay, Dr. Paul Anderson, Minnesota Board of Animal Health, welcome to the committee, sir. I don't know if you have some opening statement or are here for questions, or what are you thinking?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Paul Anderson. For the record, I'm a veterinarian with the Board of Animal Health. Mr. Chairman, do we have the handout on kind of the current status of things?
Yes, and maybe to start off, if you could take us through that. Members, you should have something that says Minnesota Board of Animal Health Farm Survey Fact Sheet, April 6, 2006, that I was referring to, sir.
That's the document.
Okay, if you could take us through that, and then we'll ask, I know there's some questions for you.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, registration of Farm Survey became the responsibility of the Board of Animal Health and became a mandatory function during the session 2003, effective that summer 2003, and we've been working with the folks who raised these animals ever since. And I'd like to just let you know where we are with the current status of the program. Right now in Minnesota, we have 727 farms where cervids are raised. That includes white-tailed deer, elk, reindeer, sika deer, fallow deer, and several other types of cervidae. Of those herds, we have 715 that are fully registered and in compliance with the law. That leaves a gap of 12 herds only. Most of those people are new farms where they have purchased animals and are yet to have our folks out to the farm to get things squared away. We do have a couple of folks who were pushing at this point to get things in order, but very few. For the most part, the farmers in this state have done just exactly what the law requires. They test their animals for CWD. They test them for tuberculosis and brucellosis. Let me give you some numbers. Currently on farms, we have 10,232 elk. We have 6,900 white-tailed deer, 1,939 other species. We have a very active reindeer association in Minnesota, and some folks that raise red deer and fallow deer. That brings the total to 19,071 animals on these 727 farms. In the last 12 months, and just to give you some idea of how much work people have been doing, in the last 12 months, there have been 2,100 of these animals tested for chronic wasting disease. Most of these samples are collected by the producer themselves and submitted with the help of their veterinarian. Of those animals, 4,167 have been tested for tuberculosis. Most of what drives that is the export market, because to move interstate, they have to be tested for tuberculosis. And we have 2,101 animals that have been tested for brucellosis. And we do have one animal that has recently been diagnosed with chronic wasting disease. We have one farm under quarantine for that disease in Lac-La-Parle County, just found within the last several weeks. And I can certainly talk about that if the chair wishes. To give you an idea of the movement of animals in and out of Minnesota, in the last 12 months we've imported 99 animals of some type of cervidae. We have exported 1,144 animals to other states. The second page of that is a map that gives you an idea of, on a per county basis, how many of these farms is in each one of your counties. And then the last map, what it does is it gives you some idea in the United States of the areas that we would consider endemic areas or areas where chronic wasting disease exists in the wild. We do not allow importation of animals from any of those yellow areas under any circumstance. And then, of course, northern part of Lower Peninsula of Michigan is a TB endemic area, and we do not allow animals to come from that area into Minnesota either. It gives you some idea that our import regulations are very strict. We make people go through a lot of testing and a lot of hoops before we'll allow their animals to come into Minnesota. And I would like to, in closing, I'd like to compliment our producers. The people who raise these animals in Minnesota have worked very, very hard over the last 3 years. I know most of them very well, and I can't say enough about the good job they've done.
Thank you very much, Doctor, and I want to thank you for meeting with me last week to kind of bring me up to speed here on some of these issues. I have Representative Hamilton and Blaine, but first of all, the gentleman from Deer Hunter Association said there have been several cases of chronic wasting disease. We have one listed here.
Right.
Is there more than one?
In 2002, we found an elk in Aiken County with chronic wasting disease. In the trace outs and the epidemiology of that particular case, we found a second positive elk that was found on a farm in Stearns County near Sauk Center. Before that investigation was finally completed, a third animal that came from that farm was found on a farm in Valdez, Wisconsin, which is over by Green Bay. All of those herds have been euthanized. The DNR has done extensive testing in the areas around these farms and found no spread to the wild. This case that we just found in Lac-La-Parle County is a very strange case. It's a very small herd, 18 white-tailed deer and 2 elk on that farm. This gentleman actually raises purebred Angus cattle as well. And he tested his animal. This animal was sick. It was euthanized on the farm. He collected the brainstem and the lymph nodes as instructed. They were positive both at the University of Minnesota and at the reference lab in Ames, Iowa. There has been very, very little movement of animals in and out of this particular farm. It's near Madison, if you know where Madison is. And the one kind of concern that we have is that we know that this particular individual is an avid hunter as well. He and his sons brought back 2 mule deer from Colorado in 2002. That was before most of these bans went on such practices. And I know that those carcasses were discarded in the grove behind the house. We don't know, and we will never know if those animals were positive or not. But certainly we're concerned about that as a possibility for how this animal could have been infected. We're still early on in the investigation. We're looking into it. But there have literally been no animals that came to this farm except for herds that have been testing for CWD for many, many, many years.
Thank you, sir. How many cases have been reported in Wisconsin?
Cases in the wild or cases on farms?
Combined.
I know there have been several hundred positive cases in white-tailed deer that have been harvested, free-ranging white-tailed deer. There have also been, you know, several farmed locations that have been tested that have been positive. The most recent one near Portage, Wisconsin, was a herd that with the regulatory officials in Wisconsin have been trying to euthanize that herd for a number of years, and unfortunately when those animals were killed, out of 76 animals, 60 some of them were positive for CWD. So you know, that herd had been under quarantine for a long time, but unfortunately it was highly infected as well.
Okay. Representative Hamilton and Blaine. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Dr. Anderson, you know, the question that I asked earlier was about every animal being tested, and you just walked through the testing protocol. In your professional opinion, do you think the protocols that we have in place to test the animals, the farm-raised cervidae, do you think it's adequate to protect the integrity of the wild herds that we have out there?
Dr. Anderson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hamilton, we do think this is adequate. The reason that animals are only tested after they reach 16 months of age is because of the long incubation period of this disease. When animals are infected at a young age, they will not test positive probably until they reach that age. We know maybe it's a little different in white-tailed deer, but the science of this would indicate that 16 months is kind of the magic age for incubation. And we really feel that this is an adequate program. This program is being used across the United States. It's been accepted by all groups, and actually these laws and rules were developed with the help of a Cervidae Advisory Committee for Minnesota, and on that committee are members from DNR, Board of Animal Health, Department of Ag, Department of Health, the deer hunters, the deer breeders, everybody was involved with that process when these laws were actually developed, and we all felt that this was an adequate surveillance tool.
And Dr. Anderson, how is CWD transmitted from animal to animal?
Dr. Anderson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, good question. We don't know everything about how it's transmitted, but what we do certainly know is that it can be transmitted readily from deer to deer. We think that it's probably excreted in most of the bodily secretions like saliva, manure, possibly urine. We don't know, but certainly saliva is probably the most targeted way. We know that this protein that causes the disease, it's a prion disease, can remain on the premises and in carcasses and on the soil for long periods of time, and that deer can become infected by contact with that material.
And one final question, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Anderson, in the event that farm tests positive, in the event farm test positive, could you once again just walk me through the protocol as far as eradicating, you know, CWD in that area?
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, the procedure is, and I'll use this most recent case as an example, this farm was quarantined within hours of the time that we got the positive results. We started working with the producer. That herd, the entire herd, will be euthanized. All those animals will be killed and brought to the University of Minnesota Diagnostic Lab for testing. We will trace any animals that moved out of that herd or into the herd over the last 5 years at least, probably longer. If animals that are positive had been in other herds in the last 5 years, those herds would be quarantined as well, and then decisions would be made if those herds had to be euthanized. But any herd that has been diagnosed with this disease, the entire herd is euthanized, and then probably the quarantine would last at least 5 years where no more cervidae can be on that farm.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one follow-up. In the event that an animal out in the wild is found with CWD, what processes or protocols are taken then?
Dr. Anderson?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, I would defer to my friends from the Department of Natural Resources to answer that question. That can be difficult, as we've seen in Wisconsin. But I would like them to answer that question if that would be possible.
And Representative Hamilton, we do have someone from the department here. Paula, for?
No, fine, thanks.
Dr. Anderson, what's your position on the venison donation bill? Just kidding. Representative Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Anderson, Representative Hamilton asked one of the questions I was after was how this disease is transmitted, and you said it's transmitted readily and can be transmitted through saliva, fecal material, or others. What I'm interested in is more specifically. Could this disease be transmitted then between nose-to-nose contact through a fence?
Dr. Anderson?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Blaine, if the answer is that possible, the science would indicate that that certainly is possible.
Representative Blaine?
I guess the other question that I have, and I'm not sure if this would be pertinent to Mr. Anderson, but I'm just curious, I guess, that, and maybe to maybe there's someone who is here who raises a cervidae, and we have the map with the tremendous number of people that are actually raising deer and elk and cervidae in the state. But what are happening to these animals then if we're not hunting them, if we're not having controlled hunts for these animals in the state, what are our cervidae farmers doing with these animals then? Typically, are we just keep growing herds out there, and or are these animals slaughtered and their meat is sold, I'm just looking for an answer to that question.
Dr. Anderson, what happens to most of these
animals? Mr. Chair and Representative Blaine, this would be a good time just to let you know that part of the farm cervidae law is that when any of these folks move an animal off of their farm for any purpose, they have to report that movement to the Board of Animal Health within 14 days. That's a lot of work for them, but they do it by email, and they do it by paper, and they do it by other means, and they've done a very good job. We do know where these animals go, and certainly, as with any other kind of livestock, a lot of these animals are slaughtered for food. These animals are exported, and they're exported for various purposes. Some go to shooting preserves. Some go for breeding stock. They go to other folks in other states for multiple reasons. These animals... are harvested, as with other livestock, mostly for food.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if they are, in the past then, if they were sold off of a Minnesota cervidae farm to a shooting preserve, then they were going outside of the state of Minnesota for that to happen.
Dr. Anderson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Blaine, these animals do go oftentimes to shooting preserves in other states. That is correct.
Okay.
Representative Dunkey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the chronic wasting disease testimony, Mr. Chair, but I'm trying to figure out how that pertains to a prohibition on taking by firearm or archery within the confines of these places, which is the bill before us, right, that we're having a discussion on. Is there some concern, an exaggerated or a more concern when people are slaughtering by firearm or archery for chronic wasting disease, or are you here just kind of for informational purposes on CWD, or do you have a concern, a position on this bill one way or another?
Representative Junkie, before you got here, there's some testimony the author brought up several times. Several people brought up their concern of the spreading of CWD. Representative Hoppe. So that's kind of how it gets in here, that is a concern of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association.
But how are farm cervidae, it appears, you know, that you're very strict. We know where all these animals are. If they get it, if they're tested, how does taking by firearm or archery affect CWD one way or another?
Dr. Anderson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, for the Board of Animal Health, it really is a non-issue on how they're harvested. What we require, whether they're harvested by firearm or whether harvested in other manner, is that they be tested for these diseases, and specifically for chronic wasting disease. So, you know, certainly for the Board of Animal Health, we can manage a farm no matter how the animals are harvested.
Sure.
I would remind the committee, though, or tell the committee that there are rules in Minnesota for how livestock are to be harvested, whether they're cattle or pigs or farm cervidae, if they're to be used for human food. That's covered under Chapters 31 and 31A, which is the Department of Ag's issue. And we certainly encourage our producers always to have these animals processed correctly in a licensed facility in Minnesota so that we protect the human health issue. And Mr. Chair, that
31A?
31 and 31A.
Not B?
Not B.
Okay.
So I thank you, Mr. Chair. That does answer my question that CWD, it doesn't matter how we slaughter the CWD, it doesn't affect one way or another. That's exactly what I was looking for. Thank you.
To that point, Representative Blaine?
Just for clarification on this, he had mentioned before, Mr. Anderson, that you know where all of these deer are in the state of Minnesota, or all these cervidae are in the state of Minnesota that are raised here, and where they go when they leave. If our friends who raise a cervidae sell them for breeding stock, for hunting purposes, for whatever, do we also do the same testing for animals that come into the state? For example, if I want to start a shooting preserve in my back 40 and I want to bring in some trophy elk from my buddy in Colorado, am I required then to have these elk tested before they're brought in? And I think that's a point that the committee should know.
Representative Blaine, I don't think I'd take them out of Colorado. No. Let's say Montana.
I don't have any. Have any friends in Colorado.
Well, I don't have any friends.
Well, I was going to say that too, but then after seeing everybody laughing, I thought, well, I won't go there.
Dr. Anderson, to the question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Blaine, the procedure for bringing animals into Minnesota from other states is that they have to have 3 years of state or provincial recognized CWD surveillance. They have to be tested twice for tuberculosis. They have to be tested for brucellosis. And what we do is when a producer or a veterinarian calls us from another state and says they would like to send these animals into Minnesota, what we do is we take the information and then we call the state veterinarian in the other state or in the provincial government in the case of Canada, and we confirm with the state offices that, in fact, these people are registered with them, that they have 3 years of CWD surveillance, that they have their tuberculosis testing done and their brucellosis testing. Once they jump through all those hoops, we will give them a permit if they're coming not from one of these yellow endemic areas. So we look on a map, and we have a bunch of atlases in our office that are about worn out from looking at little towns in all the states, because we make sure that they're not coming from an area that would put any of our animals free roaming or farmed in Minnesota at risk. We're very, very careful, and we're very, very studious about that.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Anderson. Unless there's any other questions, we will go into the testifiers, the folks that have concerns about the bill that's not before us. Okay, so we will now go to, I'm just going to go down my, did the folks that have concerns have any order they want to go in, or should we just go from the bottom to the top to the bottom? Okay. We'll start with Holly Johnson, then we'll go to Scott Gruen, then we'll go to Jim Byrne, Don Olson, Fred Huber, Dr. Glenn Zebarth, and Mr. Ed Bogus from the DNR. If you could please state your names and who you represent for the record, please.
Hi, Mr. Chair. My name is Holly Johnson. I'm the president of the Minnesota Deer Breeders Association.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Do you want us both? Or?
You can start out.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Holly Johnson, and I serve as volunteer president of the Minnesota Deer Breeders Association. I'm also the paid executive director for the North American Deer Farmers Association and serve on the United States Animal Health Association board. Most importantly, it is as a white-tailed deer farmer from southeast Minnesota that I want to personally thank you for the opportunity to be here today. We are very appreciative that you've allowed us the opportunity to share with you information about the Minnesota cervidae industry. During the farm crisis of the 1980s, the agricultural industry was charged with finding alternative forms of farming. We have found in raising deer and elk an alternative agricultural pursuit that is growing and thriving in our state today. There are 727 families farming cervids in our state, 727 families whose livelihoods depend on the continued growth of this important industry. Minnesota is not alone in the growth of the cervid industry. Our neighboring states, Iowa and Wisconsin, have a number of cervid farms as well as an end market for slaughtering their animals. The state of Minnesota's cervidae industry is highly regulated. Our animals are considered as livestock in practice and in state statute. Our farm operations and our livestock procedures are administered by the Minnesota Board of Animal Health. There is a Cervidae Advisory Committee Board comprised of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, the University of Minnesota, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, the Minnesota Department of Health, the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association, the Minnesota Deer Breeders Association, and the Minnesota Board of Animal Health. The Cervidae Advisory Board exists in order to discuss, plan, and implement what's best for the cervid population in our state. With the health and well-being of the cervid as the top priority for everyone around the table, the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, despite their seat at the Cervidae Advisory Board, has initiated legislation that would preclude our industry from pursuing one avenue of harvesting our animals, and have come to you to ask for action without providing an accurate view of our industry and of our commitment to healthy animals. We appreciate that you and many others of the House of Representatives are taking the time to listen to the family farmers who will be impacted so negatively if this legislation were to pass. And last but not least, I am a huge supporter of the venison donation bill.
Ma'am, you can continue as long as you'd like.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Please state your name for record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is James Byrne from Pine Island, Minnesota. I'm the current president of the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association.
Mr. Byrne, are you the one that has on Highway 52 before you get to Pine Island if you're going north?
Oh, I wish. I really wish.
That's 1,200 acres of probably...
1,800 acres.
1,800 acres?
Yes.
What's
and
that worth?
I have 40 acres just about 5 miles west.
So you've got Blaine's back 40, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Please continue, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My son and I have raised elk in Olmsted County for the last 12 years, and we operate in accordance with the Board of Animal Health and subsequently the provisions of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's rules and regulations. Our job is to make a living and to provide an income for our families. Our job and livelihood currently depend on the four markets for our livestock. One, breed stock, which is only a viable market when there are active and profitable markets to be had. Two, for meat, and that's a developing industry for us. However, we are in direct competition with imports from New Zealand, who've been well established within our country for 15 to 20 years.
Of elk?
Elk and venison. Mm-hmm. We import about 2.25 million pounds of venison in a year from New Zealand. If you go to a white table restaurant, the elk or the venison that you eat there will probably have come from New Zealand.
Okay, thank you, sir.
However, our markets, we are trying to break into that market at this time. Antler production is another market, mainly exporting to the Asian countries. And however, we are now similarly experiencing the restrictions the beef industry is having with their beef into Japan and into Asia also. And finally, our hard antler bulls are one market for us to either provide for preserves or to other farms for breed stock. Like other industries, our markets have a rise and fall, and we must maintain a flexibility to continue to produce a bottom line to support our families. You take away any one of these markets, and it has a drastic impact on our ability to generate these incomes and provide for our families. Like other livestock and agricultural industries, we buy feed from our local elevators, our health programs support the local veterinarians, our fencing and handling materials support the local lumber and hardware stores. We hire local transporters to move our animals to processing centers and other sites, both in and outside of Minnesota. Our farms support a multitude of other businesses and industries in rural Minnesota. In Olmsted County, I'm just one of 25 farms that are, all of which support the economies of that county. Our farms provide an alternative agricultural industry to rural Minnesota, which can take land that is of marginal use and provides a source of income to our families and communities. Our farms are efficient users of our natural resources. For example, for every acre that you can raise one beef cow, you can raise three elk. And that alone would triple the production and our potential income, and point out that it is reflected in our local economies and finally into the state coffers. Bottom line here is we provide jobs for Minnesota, both as farmers and the supporting industries that go to make up the rest of our communities. Take away our markets and the job, we lose our jobs, and the economic impact disappears within our towns and counties. All we ask is the right to market our animals in accordance with the Board of Animal Health and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture regulations, and be allowed to provide a substantial income for our families.
Thank you, Mr. Byrne. You're from Pine Island?
Pine Island, Minnesota, yes.
Home of the Mighty Panthers?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Johnson, where are you from?
Millville.
Oh, the Watchman. Oh, so you're Goodyear County?
I'm in Wabasha County.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. But you're going to be Bulldogs or Gophers?
My daughters will be Bulldogs. Tigers, no, Lake City Tigers.
Open and rolling?
No, we're 9 miles from Lake City.
Oh. Okay. Questions? You had a real question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hamilton, I'm just calling for you.
Home of the Wolverines, Mr.
All right.
Chairman. Ms. Johnson, or is it Mr. Olson? Is that right?
Mr. Byrne.
Oh, Byrne, sorry. Either one of you. We heard testimony about addressing the safety and the health concerns. You touched briefly on the economic impact, so that's what I'm looking for. As far as the economic impact, information that I received was like a $271 million contribution to the state of Minnesota. Is that an accurate number?
Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, we do have somebody who will be giving testimony very shortly on the economic impact, and she'll cover all the facets of that real well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Scott Gruen. Welcome to committee, sir, and if you'd state your name and where you're from, please.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Scott Gruen. I'm from Candiac County, which is Wilmer, Minnesota, which is about 20 miles south.
What's Wilmer?
Maybe the Cardinals.
Cardinals. Okay. Home of the Mighty Cardinals.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm a hog producer. Just to give you a little spiel where I'm coming from, 1994, I started looking at an alternative way to make a living on a farm. I farm 160 acres, raised 220 sows farrow to finish by myself and with my wife, and started developing some allergies and stuff to the hogs. Got into the elk, looked at different areas that I thought it was a pretty rock solid business to get into. But the number one thing that was my salvation was the hard antler. And that was the biggest goal that I had. A lot of guys looked at velvet meat and different issues, but mine was hard antler. Currently today, in the last 2 years, I get a little spiel what my operation's doing. Now, you remember, it's on 160 acres. Spending about $80,000 over the last 2 years on purchase feed, grain, hay. Local vet is getting about $15,000 of that income. Repairs and maintenance are getting about $27,000. We spent in the last 2 years about $150,000 on either new or used equipment. That all goes back to the local community. Approximately 90% of my income comes from preserves hunted animals. Last year I sold about $10,000 worth of animals in Minnesota, with the remainder coming out of state. If we test positive in the state of Minnesota like we have now, that may stop me from shipping animals out of state. Every state has their own protocol to where you can ship into. I've got people lined up right now to for next year's animals that if I can't get them out of state, to harvest them in the state of Minnesota. Put an ad in the paper last fall. Had two butcher cows I wanted to get rid of. I had one call. And that was, we were willing to pay half of what I was asking. A couple months later, I had another guy call up. He asked if he could go to South Dakota to hunt cows out there, elk cows. And I got him down to take two cows in Minnesota now for twice what I was asking for the animals on my yard. So it gives you a little bit of idea of what this 160 acres is producing off this little tiny farm is probably equivalent to farmers that are 1,000 acres, 2,000 acres. And in rural Minnesota is dying the way it is. You're going to take this, by passing this bill, you would take that right away from them.
Mr. Gruen, how large is your herd?
Mr. Chair, my herd is about 200 head, varies 175 to 200 depending on the time of the year.
You mentioned hay, you feed them corn?
We've produced some of the grain ourselves, but mainly the grain that we use is oats, purchased corn, purchased elk pellets. I think I purchased 6 semi-loads of hay this past year. So a lot of it is local neighbors that I'm buying this from.
Can you feed them DDGs from ethanol plants?
No, I haven't.
Can you?
I don't think so.
We'd like it if you would. Okay. Any questions for Mr. Gruen? Thank you very much, sir, for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Don Olson. Yes. Oh, okay. Thank you. Fred Huebner, if the page could pass, or you want to give it, or
I'll
pass?
Just give it.
Okay, thanks. Please state your name, who represents the record, please.
My name is Lynn Osterman, and I represent the Deer Breeders Association, Mr. Chair, but I'm playing the part of Fred Huebner, who is also the president of the North American Deer Farmers Association this afternoon. This is Mr. Huebner's testimony, and he apologizes that he couldn't be here. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking time to hear the farmers from Minnesota today. In my role as a national spokesperson, it's very frustrating to see these fine folks in a fight for their farms. This legislation came out of the blue this year without any warning to the remaining members of your Minnesota Cervidae Advisory Board. It would be my hope that you fine lawmakers would see fit to return this issue to that very board. The Deer Hunters Association has a seat at that table, and it would make sense to me to have that group work out regulation issues similar to what has been done in other states. I won't lie to you. There is often a tussle between the hunters and the breeders. That's not surprising. The issues your state hunters association is pointing to as their objections are not unique to Minnesota. We've seen them elsewhere. What I am truly hoping, however, is that policymakers in this state will work with the farmers to establish guidelines that everyone can abide by, assisting this industry to continue to mature in Minnesota. I am also hoping you will strongly consider the economic impact of this industry and just how much revenue is currently leaving your fine state. I get paid to transport deer from Minnesota to other states, to shooting preserves for harvesting. Just last year, I moved 55 deer from only 11 of the deer farms in Minnesota. Each of those sales represented about $3,000 to the farm they originated on. The economic impact of those sales, using U.S. News and World Report statistics, was $1.4 million. Mr. Chair, there are 727 cervid farms in Minnesota with a total of 3,635 mature bucks and bulls each year. End market sales right here in Minnesota could be over $30 million each year using an average shoot of $8,500, just like in Missouri and Ohio, which is where a lot of your cervidae are currently transferred to. That's a total of $271 million in economic impact that your state is missing out on. We know you've got concerns about the health and safety of transporting cervid, so I'll close so you can hear some important information about just how strictly this industry is regulated in your state. The rest is him saying he'd be happy to answer questions, and he can't. So okay. That closes my remarks.
Thank you. I do have a question. I don't know if you know or somebody would know. How many of these elk farmers currently allow hunting on their farms or preserves, or
Mr. Chair, within the elk industry, we know of only four farms that are currently engaged.
Well, why don't you come down a second here?
Four preserves in Minnesota. I have
four preserves.
Yeah.
There's four preserves. So basically what this bill does would just say you couldn't, those four preserves you couldn't hunt on.
But
and nobody else could start.
Right now, the association is only aware of four that are actively pursuing the harvest of animals behind fence at this point in time. There are more waiting to find out how this goes. We understand that producers strapped for cash are not willing to invest in something that could be tenuous. So right now there are four that are actively that we know of.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, I got a question for that.
Sure. Person Hamilton.
Thank you.
Hey.
Thank you. Hey, that just triggered another question. Thank you. For those, do you feel comfortable speaking on behalf of those four people that allow hunting on their farms? And the reason I bring that up is, you know, I think there's some misconceptions, if you will, that these animals are in, you know, a small pen or, you know, a little building or tied to a tree or whatever. Can you walk us through this? Because so far the smallest farm is 160 acres, and that's by no means close to a small pen.
The smallest farm so far is 40 acres.
Oh, 40 acres?
My,
even so. Okay. Can you comment on that, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton. To the best of our knowledge, the ones that are in operation, I don't know of any under 80 acres myself. And, in fact, the bill language that we drew up addressed 80 acres as the minimum. And I don't know of anybody who would want to set up an operation under 80 acres.
Person Hamilton.
You know, I like to hunt. I'm a hunter. I like to hunt, and I want to make sure that we, you know, the integrity is there for the health of the wildlife, et cetera, et cetera. I also see an economic benefit here. I believe the last testifier said something like, you know, $271 million, you know, contributing to the Minnesota economy. The other issue that was brought up was the issue of the ethical issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to make sure that these animals, you know, farm-raised are humanely raised, of course, and also that, you know, if somebody can have the opportunity, whether they're elderly or disabled, they're looking for, you know, safety reasons or, you know, whatever the reason may be, that, again, everything is being done to humanely treat the animal, if you will, raising the animal, providing a safe environment, and I want to put to rest any misconceptions about, you know, some of the examples that I gave earlier. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton. In the bill language that we did draw up, we did address things such as means of escape, minimum acreages, fair chase and things like that. And a positive public image for us is of the utmost importance. If we have clients that come and they don't feel good about the hunt that they had, they're not going to come back. So a positive public image is everything to us, and the Minnesota deer hunters do know that. We have, you know, spoke back and forth a little bit, and they know that that is of the utmost importance to us. So it is really, really hard for industry when we hear these stories about these small box-in pens and, you know, animals pretty much chained to a tree because it's not the reality.
Representative Hamilton?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hamilton, Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Byrne?
The reality of this whole thing comes down. We are farmers. We need to make a living from these animals. If you stop to think about this real hard, is that you are giving a hunter a choice to hunt inside the fence or outside the fence. If the deer hunters and the hunters do not like to hunt with inside the fence, they do not need to participate in it. If we do not make a profit on this, we move our animals into other markets and continue on with it. We don't need legislation to put us out of business. All we need is nobody to show up at the door, and it's a right of choice here. Do you want to shoot behind the fence? And I don't call it a hunt. My own personal opinion is this is a self-harvest.
And so you're pro-choice on this issue?
I believe in the rights of the hunter to make his choice, what he wants to do it. And he can put me out of business by not coming to the door. If I can't sell my animals, I have to move them somewhere else.
Mr. Byrne, somebody testified that there's 4 farms that allow hunting right now, but how many of those farms sell to hunting preserves and make income from selling to that? Ms. Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All of the service farmers in Minnesota, I believe that the number of places that are trying to conduct hunts at this time is a little bit closer to 10 to 12. However, they're not able to buy all of the animals that we raise here in Minnesota. So the majority of our animals right now are going out of state. And like Mr. Byrne mentioned a minute ago, there are a number of people that are considering doing this, but they're waiting to see how this legislation ends up.
Do any of Ms. Johnson, do any other states or Mr. Byrne have a similar law if House File 3362 is enacted? Does any other state do this? Or maybe we can talk to the DNR about that, or are you aware of it?
I do not know, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, are you referring to have other states tried to ban hunting preserves? There have been a number of other states that have tried it unsuccessfully in West Virginia, Iowa, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Missouri. They have all been unsuccessful. Indiana is in the fight right now of trying to keep their preserves open, and they haven't come to the final conclusions yet of how that's going to end. But, you know, like Mr. Huebner said in his statement, it isn't a big secret that there's a little controversy between the Minnesota or any hunting group and the survey group. It's kind of happened in a number of states. So that's why it would be our greatest wish to refer all this back to the Survey Advisory Board, because that's what it was designed for, and then we can negotiate and kind of come to an agreement that both sides would feel comfortable with.
Okay, Wealthy Penis Junkie, before we go any further, are there any Fillmore or Houston County Survey farmers here? Where are you from? Really?
Yeah.
But you're not District 31B then. You're Fillmore Township? Okay, we're about ready to adjourn here. Okay, let's go now to some questions. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for testifiers Johnson and Byrne, I'm looking at just some of the things that have been said. I just want a clarification that how many deer preserves do we have in the state of Minnesota? We're talking about elk preserves, and there are 4. How many deer preserves do we have?
Ms. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Welty. I believe there are 6 to 8 people that are conducting hunts for white-tailed deer. So then if you add on the elk preserves, 4.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then another question. The comment's been made that this bill would put farmers out of business, or it would keep those from who are considering establishing a farm from establishing one right now. Tell me how this would happen, given the current market that you're in. As I look at it, I look at the numbers across the state, most people that are entering this business are not going to be selling to those 10 preserves unless we're taking an immense amount of deer from 10 preserves. Actually, 6 to 8 preserves, because the 4 are elk. So everyone that's getting into this business at this point or is currently in it is selling it for the consumption on farm, or they take those to a processing plant and then they're processed for consumption. Otherwise, the other issues that you talked about. So how is this bill going to put people out of business?
Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Welty, that's an excellent question. Right now, the majority of our bucks, our mature bucks, are going out of state to out-of-state preserves. I mean, I think it would be in everybody's best interest if we could keep those animals and that revenue right here in Minnesota. What one of our fears is, with chronic wasting disease, if the other states were to tighten up their restrictions or even close the borders on us and we didn't have an outlet for our animals right here in Minnesota, it would be devastating to our industry.
Representative Welty.
Thank you. All right, then going off of that, just the input that you gave there. Actually, I think I'll take a minute to think about what you said and come back with another question, but I think, you know, if CWD was to become an issue in the states neighboring to us and they were supposed to close their borders to Minnesota, I mean, you're going to have an issue no matter if there are preserves in Minnesota or not. You'd have to have a lot of preserves in Minnesota to take all of the deer that are currently being raised and provide a market for them. At this point, I'll listen to the other questions.
Okay, thank you, Representative Welty. Representative Pennis, and then John to
Representative Pennis. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I've got a whole bunch of stuff written, but I'll just really be brief. I asked if there was statute as to defining fair chase, because I think that's important that we have a definition. Right now, just going from what I know on our own land, we could sell, sell time in hunting stands for deer, which gather 30 or 40 on a field in soybeans and hay, sunflowers, wheat, you know, because of mosquitoes, corn, whatever. In the same wisdom of this, then the state of Minnesota should fence off the wild deer herd from my land, you know? You know, is roadkill fair chase? I mean, I know it sounds facetious, but fair chase needs to be defined then.
Mr. Sullivan?
It isn't in there. I've already checked.
It's not in 31 or 31.
And I'll leave it with that.
Okay. Percent junkie.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just have more of a comment than a question. And like I think Representative Hamilton got me thinking about this because I hunt too. I hunt in my past life. I've hunted deer and certainly when you think about should you hunt deer out in the open or should you hunt on a 160 or 320 or acre preserve, I guess I liken it to and what I finally thought about, you know, it's a choice that you make whether you're handicapped like he said or blind or, you know, elderly or whatever reason that you decide to go and hunt your animal that way. I guess I'm trying to understand what the problem is with that because we have other preserves, Mr. Chair. I'm also a pheasant hunter. And I can pay a farmer to raise pheasants and go out and plant them and walk out and I know I'll flush birds on that hunt and be able to shoot. So I guess my question is if we're going to ban this type of farmed hunting, shouldn't we ban all types of farmed hunting and go back to the pure aspect of hunting for everything? And I finally made that connection when Representative Hamilton said that, and that's a connection I've been trying to think about, is maybe it's not my choice to hunt deer that way, and it's not my choice, frankly, to hunt pheasants off a preserve either, but the fact is it is a choice for some for whatever reason. You want to train your dog, you go to the pheasant preserve. You have a kid, you want to make sure they get shots. You choose to go to the pheasant or the grouse preserve, and you know they'll kick the planted birds up, and you'll be able to fire your gun. So again, I look at this as kind of a choice issue as far as hunting goes. And if the purists in the hunting field are not happy with that, Mr. Chair, then I think we ought to look at all types of hunting preserves in this state and not just the cervidae.
I don't think we have enough seats. Very good point. Representative Hoppe, to that point?
Can I respond to that point?
Sure can. Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Junkie, I think you raise a good point. We are in no way, shape, or form intending this to cover any kind of type of birds, whether it's pheasants, ducks, quail, chucker, whatever it would be. And there is a distinction. If you let a pheasant go and it flies, it can get away. You know, this deer or elk is not going to get away. There also is a disease question. We're not looking at chronic wasting disease or any of the other diseases with the pheasants or quail or chucker, whatever it is, that we're talking about with imported cervids.
We have bird flu. Avian bird flu.
Mm-hmm. Sure, but we're not importing that. That might come or might not come, but we're not deliberately becoming an importer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
But Representative Hoppe, the Board of Animal Health said they didn't really see a problem with the chronic wasting disease where no matter how you harvest these cervidae, where there's really going to be a problem.
I think the Board of Animal Health, Mr. Chair, was responding just to the question. I think it was Representative Junkie's question was to how they're harvested and whether it's with a bow or a gun. It doesn't matter from that perspective because the animals are going to be tested once they're killed, whether it's a bow or a gun or you know, you do it with a bolt gun or whatever.
Well, I understand. Mr. Anderson, Dr. Anderson, can you please come down here a second? Is it the Board of Animals? Well, I'll wait till you're done. Is the Board of Animal Health position that it makes no difference how you hunt with them, gun or bow, or if they're farm-raised or in the wild? Did you understand that? I didn't either.
I was going to say, I hope
not. I believe the question is, you know, you'd stated, the question I think was from Representative Junkie earlier. Could you restate your question?
Well, my question was, does the Board of Animal Health have a position whether firearm or archery slaughter is worse or better with CWD than you know, taking them to a slaughtering plant or slaughtering them in the barn and bring them into a plant for processing? And I think you responded that no, it doesn't. The slaughter doesn't matter when it comes to CWD, whether it's firearm, archery, or typical standard ways of slaughtering livestock.
Well, then I'd ask the question, does it matter if they're on a farm or in the wild when you shoot them if there's a problem with CWD?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll respond to that.
Mr. Hoppy?
And I think the way that the answer was before to Representative Junkie's question, I would agree with that. It doesn't matter because when they're dead, no matter how they got dead, and they're getting tested. The problem is we're going to be importing a lot more animals and increasing. We've had testifiers up here that said, if other states, if we have chronic wasting disease in the wild here, we're not going to be able to export our animals. So if other states have that problem, we're limiting our market. And if we have chronic wasting disease come in the wild here, it doesn't matter, you know, once we have it, we have it. You know, the animal's going to be dead or not dead. We just don't want to increase the chances of having it in our farmed or wild cervidae. We don't want to become a net importer of these animals as opposed to now where we're a net exporter.
Dr. Anderson, do you think we're increasing the risk of CWD by having shooting preserves?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, it would not be my opinion that importing animals into Minnesota would increase the risk of CWD. We are very, very careful about the regulations when we do bring animals in, and I'm not sure if having shooting preserves in Minnesota would actually increase imports either. We probably have the finest elk and white-tailed deer in the country right here in this state, and you know whether or not we would see a net import increase or not, I'm not sure. What I do know, though, is that we're very picky about what we allow into the state. We take great precaution to make sure that they meet the CWD testing requirements, as well as TB and brucellosis. And it's not easy to get animals into Minnesota. We're you know, the statutes are very clear and they're very strict.
Representative Pennison, welcome. Representative Pennison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this, I think Representative Hoppy brings up a point, though, that even I would consider. This is a prion. And so, as such, once it gets in the ground, right? I mean, it doesn't really go away. It's not like bovine TB, which dies within a certain number of hours. So if there is a deer in the wild with chronic wasting disease, and it dies, and doctor, will the prions be there for some other animal to pick up?
Dr. Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pennis, if I can restate your question so I make sure I understand what you asked.
Please.
Can the prion exist in the environment? We know that it can. It does not last forever, but we really don't know how long. A number of years, for sure. And, you know, that's why we work so very, very hard to make sure that if there's CWD on our farms, that we find it and we get rid of it immediately. These farms are under quarantine for 5 years afterwards, and the requirement, part of the requirement of the quarantine is they keep their fences up and intact, and the reason for that is we don't want free-ranging deer on those farms, and we also don't want farmed animals back on those farms. We're looking for CWD about as hard as we can, and unfortunately, we found it just recently, but that's what the surveillance system is supposed to do.
Dr. Well, we've got you here. Do you feel that we're prepared to deal with the avian flu in the state of Minnesota, the Board of Animal Health?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, we are working very hard to be prepared for avian influenza if it appears in Minnesota. And I know that Dr. Hartman and Dr. Lauer at our poultry disease lab have spent an inordinate amount of hours preparing for that event. So we're working very hard.
Mr. Chair,
just to that point, I would announce that we have been working with Representative Dorman and a number of our committee members and the turkey and poultry industry in the state, and we are going to have an amendment on the floor tomorrow for that Board of Animal Health U of M testing laboratory to bring $300,000 into remodeling, upgrading, and streamlining their operation there so they are as efficient as possible. So I'm hoping for this committee support. If you
got it signed up on it?
Yeah.
By Dorman?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Well, I have a question for the doctor.
Doctor, please. Is there a doctor in the house? President Pettis, you still have the floor?
She's gone.
I guess you got the wall. Representative Pettis, do you have any follow-up questions? Or?
No.
Okay, thank you. Representative Welty and then Hamilton.
I don't have a question for the doctor, but I have other questions for Representative Hoppe.
Okay, Representative Hamilton, then we'll go back to Representative Welty. Representative Hamilton?
Yeah, Dr. Anderson, you know, I've asked a question about the animals in the wild. And all the information as far as the farm raised, we're testing the animals, we're keeping the records, we can trace back the animals from other states, et cetera, et cetera. The concerned areas in Wisconsin and Illinois, what's to keep those animals from crossing over into Minnesota? I know we have the Mississippi there in some places, but is there any type of reassurance that those animals in the wild will not cross on their own?
Dr. Anderson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hamilton, I know I've spent time talking to my colleagues at the Department of Natural Resources, and certainly we're all concerned about that event occurring, but I'm not a wildlife specialist, and I would defer that question to some of the folks who are here that are.
Okay. Representative Hamilton, thank you. Okay, to Representative Hoppe, Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hoppe, I have a couple questions for you. First of all, as I understand it, currently in the state of Minnesota, we do not have regulations governing the preserve. Is that true?
Representative Hoppe?
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, that is true.
Okay, so
Welty.
Actually, if we were to go along with the Minnesota Deer Breeders Association and others and the plan that they put forth, we would actually have regulations in the state of Minnesota for preserves, which we currently do not have now, so therefore we'd address the issues of what is an ethical taking, what is a fair chase, and a number of other things.
Representative Hoppe?
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, we would address some of those issues if we were to adopt that. That's right.
Okay.
Representative Welty.
Thank you. And then my second question is, so what prompted this bill? Besides CWD, why is this bill before us since we currently have hunting preserves?
Representative Hoppe?
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, good question. I was on the Environment Finance Committee 3 years ago when we went from DNR supervision to Board of Animal Health supervision. And it was never legal. It's never been made legal in Minnesota to have shooting preserves. It has never passed the House of Representatives. When we changed supervision, you know, I can't remember what I was thinking back then, but I don't know if it's an oversight or nobody just thought it would happen. I'm not sure. But that's a good question.
So, Representative Hoppe, because we did not have a ban on it before, you saw the need to bring forward the bill to ban it. That's essentially the issue why it's before us.
Mr. Chair and Representative Welty, I apologize. You asked that before, and I forgot that part. I didn't know this was even going on in Minnesota until I introduced this bill. I happened to be talking to Mr. Kelleher, the lobbyist for the Deer Hunters Association, about something else, and he mentioned this in passing, and I honestly didn't know that this was going on in Minnesota. I knew that it had never been made legal. I didn't know that it was going on, and I told him if he were looking for an author, I would gladly do it, and he came to me a few days later and said, here, you're the chief author.
Are you still glad you did it?
I am extremely glad. In my whole time here, this is the single most issue that I've felt the most passionate about. This is the right thing to do for Minnesota. When we're talking about this issue, I have fair chase concerns. I also have chronic wasting disease concerns. And I would ask, the question hasn't been asked for Dr. Anderson, but I would ask if it's possible, if we get chronic wasting disease in our wild service in Minnesota, if it's possible to eradicate it. And after that question, I would ask, at what cost do we try to eradicate that?
Representative Welty?
I have no further questions at this time.
Okay, let's go on. We have two more testifiers, and I guess we're kind of getting up to the clock here.
Thank you,
Dr. Glenn, and if you could stick around with some coffee. Dr. Glenn, neither's your bill. Dr. Glenn, just kidding. Some members have been kind of in and out. We do not actually have the bill before us, but I think it's good that we're having this discussion. Dr. Glenn Zebarth and Mr. Ed Bogus. I don't know if you want to come down together or...
Mr. Chair, I'm starting to have a little bit different feeling on that Denison donation thing as the hour goes on.
You're a wise man. Dr. Glenn Zebarth, Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and also an elk breeder.
My name is Glenn Zebarth. I'm a private veterinary practitioner from Alexandria, Minnesota. I'm not associated with the Minnesota Board of Animal Health at all.
Okay, but you're an elk breeder too?
I am an elk farmer, yes.
Okay.
I'm president of the Elk Research Council, and I've published peer-reviewed articles on prion protein disease, specifically on the genetic susceptibility of elk, different genotypes of elk to chronic wasting disease, a TSC.
Thank you, sir. We've got a lot of presidents here today, don't we, a lot of Presidents Day at the Capitol.
What was
the president of again?
It's a national 501c3 organization, Elk Research Council, which has been involved with chronic wasting disease research for about 15 years.
Okay, please present your testimony, sir.
Okay, the testimony, the points that I would like to make to you today, Mr. Chairman, are that this primarily is a private property rights issue, that then go over a bit on the history of chronic wasting disease, the prion protein disease that affects cervids, the distribution in the country, deal with three specific states, Wyoming, New York, and West Virginia, and close up with encouraging you to use a logical method of jurisdiction in dealing with chronic wasting disease, and that logical method would be to deal with this animal health problem as far as chronic wasting disease with animal health officials. And you have eminently qualified people in the state, Dr. Hartman, Dr. Anderson, and those are the people that should be dealing with animal health issues. The history of chronic wasting disease is that it was first described as a syndrome in the 1960s at the Colorado Division of Wildlife Research Facilities at Fort Collins, Colorado. And that is in 1967. There was a peer-reviewed published article written describing this syndrome that they had mule deer dying. At that time, they had a practice of capturing 1- and 2-day-old mule deer fawns, primarily from Rocky Mountain National Park and other places, raising those up, bottle feeding them, raising them, using them in nutritional studies for a whole variety of nutritional aspects in mule deer. And then when they were done with the studies, those deer were either given to zoos or most of them were released back into the wild. In 1978, Dr. Elizabeth Williams described this disease as a TSC, calculated and figured out that those deer at Fort Collins were dying of a TSC. In 1981, chronic wasting disease was isolated from wild, free-ranging mule deer in Rocky Mountain National Park and in the area around Fort Collins. The deer was first found in a farm situation in 1996. So we're looking at a 30-year gap of time from 1967 to 1996, one cow in Saskatchewan. That cow traced back to South Dakota, subsequently found in South Dakota in 1997. So it's a little difficult for me to understand that South Dakota, for example, and Saskatchewan also had a mandatory postmortem requirement. At that time, then, every deer that died in South Dakota had to be autopsied and tissues submitted to Brookings Animal Disease Lab. So I don't think they missed the disease for 30 years. If we take a look, at just this one slide.
The pink is the distribution, Mr. Chairman, of chronic wasting disease and free-ranging cervids in North America. In the United States, there is also some cases in Saskatchewan and Alberta. And then the dots represent the farm cervids. But the disease started and began in, in this area right here. And as you can see, the primary state where the greatest distribution is in the state of Wyoming. Wyoming also has the greatest incidence of the disease. In certain hunter units in Wyoming, they have this taxed area. They have an incidence of 12% of mule deer, hunter kill harvest. These are hunters shooting what they think are healthy deer. And they have an incidence of 4% in elk. Wyoming is a state that does not allow game farm, has never allowed game farm. There is one grandfathered in ranch that has captive servants on it, and it happens to be in a non-affected area, right on the Montana border, up north of Lancaster. Dr. Terry Krieger, the wildlife biologist veterinarian for the Division of Wildlife in Wyoming, has stated that CWD is transferring at the rate of 50 miles a year in the state of Wyoming. And that has nothing to do with farm service. That state does not have any farm service. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out how this disease starts right here at Fort Collins and how it ends up in that area. Pretty simple migration of animals. And that incorporates Wyoming, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Colorado, and has migrated over into Utah. And so if we have it here in Wisconsin, and I'm right here at that spot in Wisconsin, free-ranging deer, and I'm over there in Minnesota, that's one thing that question came up earlier that I would be greatly interested in, is how do you prevent this just natural migration of introduction to the disease. It's a lot different to try to prevent that than it is if you have a very regulated, controlled industry where the animals are coming from a herd that's been monitored 100%. They look at every animal. The surveillance that's done in the farms is completely different than it's done in wildlife surveillance. Animals die in the wild, they get hit by cars, they get a variety of ways, unknown. In the farm situation, virtually every animal is tested. The other two cases that I would deal with is New York. The state veterinarian in this isolated area in New York, the state veterinarian in New York, Dr. John Huntley,
has stated that under a logical investigation in New York, that it's his reasonable conclusion that the CWD was introduced into New York via taxidermy samples, and that the situation there was the farm where the facility where CWD was found was a taxidermy shop that was also at the same time a rehabilitation shop. So what this person would do is he would get one day old or injured or weak fawns brought in by the New York Department of Natural Resources. He would rehabilitate those fawns, and he kept them in the same shop where he did his taxidermy work. They have tested and found and proven positive CWD heads from the endemic areas in the West, in Wyoming and Colorado, being worked on in that shop. He would then take the shop cleans and sweep them up and take them out and spread them along the fence because he used some salt as a disinfectant to keep the weeds down. The deer that he raised in that shop, if they were healthy, they were released back into the wild. If the deer seemed to be not doing well or had a bad leg or something, he kept them and raised them, and that's how he started his farm, with those deer that were rehabilitated captive deer, not farm deer, captive deer. And it's Dr. Huntley's conclusion that that's how CWD was introduced into the state of New York. In the state of West Virginia, I testified with the governor, the chairman of the DNR, and the commissioner of agriculture in West Virginia. West Virginia found by surveying roadkill white-tailed deer, they found five deer with CWD in a county that does not have any game farms in it at all. And so it's a mystery where that came from. But there aren't any farms in that county. There aren't any farms within 50 miles of the facility where they, the areas where they found those deer, and they found them all in a cluster. In New Mexico, it's been found in a military reservation a completely isolated area. So there are some areas where there isn't a good explanation of where it came from.
Okay, Dr. Hollett, we're going to need to move on here. Do you have much more? Or?
No, that's good. That's fine.
Okay, because I want to go to Representative Hoppe has a statement, and then questions for you, Doctor. And then we've got Mr. Ed Bogus, and then we're going to be running out of time, and we have to have an Apple report. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly, if you look at the map, we don't have CWD in the wild in Minnesota, in Iowa, or Missouri. If you look at the three states there, we do have chronic wasting disease in Wisconsin. How did it get there? We have cervid farms in Wisconsin. They haven't migrated across and not left any traces in Minnesota or Iowa or Missouri.
Doctor?
Well, it, for one thing, it's not known how it got into Wisconsin. There are rumors on both sides in both ways. Dr. Marshall described a TSE in mink, transmissible mink encephalitis, back in the 1960s and 1970s. I can tell you there are a number of scientists that are concerned about the link between those. As a matter of fact, the Agricultural Research Service is doing research or projects right now to see if there is a link between TME. The other thing is the fact that there are farms in Wisconsin and there's natural or wild occurring does not prove that there's a relationship. And the fact also is that there are farms, also a large number of farms in those states you just cited where there isn't CWD.
Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doctor, that's true, but are you telling me that the mink in Wisconsin have this and the mink in Minnesota, Iowa, and Missouri don't? Or in Minnesota they do, but they only infect a deer or cervids on farms?
Doctor?
No. There's
no scientific proof.
Okay, don't jump to the conclusion. A TSE was found in Wisconsin years ago, transmissible mink encephalitis. That actually hasn't been found for a number of years. There is no proven correlation between those two. It's being studied and looked at, but there's no proven correlation. There are many different rumors and possibilities. The bottom line is nobody knows at this point where it came from in Wisconsin. The even more important question is, no one really knows why all of a sudden it started at Fort Collins at Colorado Division of Wildlife.
I would just suggest to members that whenever this amendment is going to be up on the House floor, you probably want to be there. It should be quite interesting. Representative Moll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Representative Hoppe's point, Dr. Is there, does CWD, does it, can it be transferred from deer to any other species? Or what species can it be transferred to?
Doctor?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mo, the TSEs are pretty species specific. The CWD, the prion that causes CWD, has been fingerprinted and is a different prion than it causes scraping sheep, than causes BSE, than causes the four diseases in people. And it's only a disease of deer, of white-tailed deer, mule deer, elk, and moose.
Mr. Chairman? Is this potentially airborne?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moe, there are several different routes that are proven, peer-reviewed published proofs. One is 5 grams of ingested specific risk material, oral ingestion of that, which would be nervous tissue, lymphatic tissue. Beth Williams published and proved that will give you 100% infection in either elk or mule deer. Williams and Miller and Spraker took a clean area of ground, took an infected carcass from their research facilities, let that carcass decompose in that area, and then put animals back in that area, and they became infected. So a proven route of transmission is disposal of decomposition of infected carcasses. If you look at the epidemiological trace in Saskatchewan, they had 42 farms. They have a complete network. It's just like a web. It's an absolute trace out, a beautiful case of epidemiology, that disease was bought and paid for by farmers from other farmers, moved from farm to farm by transport of the animals. As a follow-up to that, they have also then depopulated all of those herds, all those entire herds. They have had like one herd break since then. They had a decontamination procedure that they did to those farms, and they allowed some of those farms to repopulate elk in a three-year period of time and have not had a break since then.
One follow-up, then we're going to Mr. Magus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess just a statement then. I mean, I'm not a doctor. You know, I'm just a physical education teacher, but it seems to me that if this disease can't be spread by air, it's only species-specific, Representative Hoppe brings up a great point. At the very least, it doesn't seem as though there's any other mechanism to spread this disease to Wisconsin and to Minnesota. You know, just you say we don't know. Well, there's a reasonable pathway here. Perhaps we should just be a little cautious.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Moe, the program, of course, for moving live animals is very cautious. It's moved, it's designed and set up to move animals only from herds that are certified low incidence, low risk herds. The other thing that I'm saying is that moving all of the hunters that go out west and shoot a deer in the infected area and bring that carcass back, that's what I mean by specific risk material.
Mr. Boggs. We have Mr. Ed Boggs from the DNR.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Ed Boggs with DNR Division of Fish and Wildlife, and since you're having this informational hearing, I thought it was important that DNR reassert its concerns about big game shooting preserves. We've been opposed back when there were attempts to legalize these, and now that they've apparently become legal, we still have concerns. We certainly recognize that the industry is carefully regulated. We have a lot of respect for Dr. Anderson, Dr. Z. Barth, and others that have worked on this issue, but to us it comes down to just a question of the risk and the reward, and we understand the industry's desire to expand the options from what they had when they first were formed in the state, but we just feel that the wild whitetail herd is an extremely valuable commodity in and of itself, and we're concerned that even an incremental increase in risk is not worth taking. So,
Mr. Boggs, you believe there's an increased risk right with what we're doing right now?
Mr. Chair, by what we're doing right now, you mean the shooting preserves that are starting to operate right now?
Status quo.
Well, we're just seeing this develop, Mr. Chairman, within the last few years, and we don't know where it's headed, but we do know that with shooting pens, they tend to be larger pens, high fences, more chance that the fence is capable of being breached just because of the acreage that's included in it, and that these animals are moved around for the purposes of shooting, because one producer may have an animal that someone wants and someone else has a shooting pen where they want to shoot it. So what's been happening within the last couple of years is we've seen a shift from trying to make these legal to kind of concluding that they are legal and starting to operate them, and we don't know where that's going to end, and we do think it's going to continue to increase movement of animals, and we do have a concern not only with that movement but with the types of facilities that they're going to be housed in.
But if we're moving animals from one restricted area to another restricted area, how does this, I mean, I think we've got it contained, don't we?
Well, Mr. Chair, at least theoretically we do, but right now I think we've heard we're a net exporter because the markets for at least the shooting animals, I know there's some meat market and a breeding market, but the shooting animal market is outside the state, and so a lot of the animals are going outside the state. We'll probably see more coming in.
But they're still controlled. They're on shooting preserves. They're not getting out in the wild. And the one case that we have in Lasco Parle County, that was not at a shooting preserve, was it?
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding, no, that was just a deer farm.
Deer farm, which you could still have anyways under the Hoppe legislation.
Mr. Chair, deer farms have been legal for about 15 years or so.
So is the DNR taking a position supporting House File 3362?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we are.
DNR taking position?
Mr. Chair, yes, we have. Our commissioner has written a letter.
Okay. No, they're supporting the bill. Representative Welty, then Hamilton. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just moved spots here for purposes of looking up law. But, Mr. Bogus, my question, I guess, is for you or for actually anybody in the audience that was up here to testify earlier. As I look at this bill and all of the discussion that we've had, it comes to my mind that, kind of going back to Representative or Chair David's comment, so we ban preserves, but that doesn't mean that we are dealing with the issue of cervidae being transported in and out of the state, because they're still breeding. There are still transactions being made where farmers are selling to farmers in Wisconsin or the other states, the areas that, of course, we can't sell and that's excluded. But how are we dealing with that issue?
Mr. Boggs?
Because we're only talking about, right now, as I understand it, we only have about 10 preserves in the state of Minnesota for elk and deer. But there have to be a lot of other transactions going on in this state and across state borders that are not related to preserves. And so I would hope that I could have others from the audience and Mr. Boggs reply.
Mrs. Johnson? Ms. Johnson? Or who? Dr. Anderson, could you help us with that, maybe?
Mr. Chairman, could we repeat the question just so I'm clear on what the question is?
I'll make the question really simple. Even if we ban hunting preserves, are we still going to have deer and elk being shipped across state borders?
Dr. Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the answer to your question is absolutely.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We keep hearing all this testimony about CWD and the issue of whether or not it's going to be transported from one area, one affected area, to the other. And I'm wondering why we keep talking about CWD when the bill is talking about banning hunting preserves. And I think that the real discussion here today with this bill is whether or not we ban hunting preserves in the state of Minnesota.
Dr. Anderson?
And this isn't for Dr. Anderson, I'm just, making a point. I think that that's what we need to get back to, because as I look at this, we're still going to have transactions taking place across state borders no matter if hunting preserves are banned or not.
Mr. Chairman. Dr. Anderson.
Sorry. Mr. Chairman, would it be appropriate for me to comment on the language, although it has not yet been formally proposed anywhere?
Whose language?
The language in Representative Hoppe's bill.
Sure.
The one thing that I'd like to say that it has occurred is that the language as it's written would put the Board of Animal Health in a very precarious position, because what it asks us to do is take a farmer's registration away from them if they engage in shooting preserve activities and ban them from having cervidae for 2 years. It would put the Board of Animal Health, it's my understanding, in a position where we would have to take legal action against these folks and put them out of business should they choose to allow someone to shoot one of their animals. And from the Board of Animal Health's perspective, that is a kind of an ominous task. It's certainly not something that we would do to any other livestock producer.
Fair point, very well taken. Representative Hamilton, then we're going to go to, I think, members, you have two points before we go to Representative Hamilton to wrap this up. Please read through on the Apple issue, my House File 4116, an agreement that's been reached. If you have questions after the meeting, you can certainly talk to Representative Erdahl, Representative Welty. He can update you and others if we would do that. I'll also announce we do not have a meeting tomorrow. We will have a meeting next Tuesday regarding aquaculture, House File 4041, water permitting fees, and I will get into some statewide aquaculture issues that could be as fun as today, actually. Okay,
and just to answer Representative Welty's point. Currently now, Dr. Anderson, correct? Maybe you can answer this. Currently now, Minnesota is an exporter of deer out of our game farms. Is that correct?
Dr. Anderson?
Almost exclusively, is that true? Or
99 coming in, 1,144 going out.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moe, we are a net exporter of deer and elk in Minnesota. That's a fact.
As we look at some of the projections on that we've been presented, how this might grow our deer herds, would you anticipate we would increase the amount of imports, or would it would we remain a net exporter?
He's already covered that, I believe.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
The answer is he doesn't necessarily see an increase on that. Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is a question for Mr. Bogus. It's been deferred to you twice. My question was two parts. You know, we have the infected animals in the wild in Wisconsin and Illinois, and testimony that they can or have migrated out 50 miles year after year in the Wyoming areas. What's to prevent the wild animals migrating into Minnesota? And then in the event that does take place, what's the DNR prepared to do to contain, eradicate, et cetera?
Mr. Bogus?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, it certainly does occur in the wild in a number of places now, and to date no one knows any way to eradicate it once it's in the wild. We would aggressively respond if it shows up in the wild here, but we don't hold any illusions that we're going to be able to get rid of it if it does show up in the wild here.
As far as your comment about aggressively responding, we've heard testimony from Dr. Anderson and others as far as the aggressive response in the event it's found on a farm, and as far as the containment, the eradication, etc. What type of plan does the DNR have in place specifically in the event it's found in the wild?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, our contingency planning would call first for determining the extent of the infection and the infection rate, and then designing management responses to reduce deer densities in those areas where it was occurring to try to minimize the spread. We know it spreads horizontally from animal to animal. There's also some environmental concerns where it can persist in the environment. So it would be first an assessment of what we're dealing with, and then a management response in terms of population reduction, but we don't have practical means, at least, that anyone's come up with to depopulate wild deer. It's different than deer inside fences.
Mr. Boggs, it just seems to me that the hunting preserves would be the worst of your problems, or the least of your
problems.
I mean, the hunting preserves and the farms where it can be contained would be the least of your problem. You've got a lot bigger problems with the deer and elk and white-tailed deer out in the wild, I would think. I mean, if it's on a farm, you depopulate the farm and it's done. So I don't understand why the DNR has a position supporting the Hoppe bill when, as we had the Board of Animal Health say, there's no problem on these preserves.
Mr. Chair, if it was a perfect...
For a dollar, you can have venison to the food shelf.
Mr. Chair, we didn't oppose your venison donation.
Yeah, you donation. That's right. That's right. We're going to wrap it up. One follow-up and we're done.
Just a follow-up comment. And, Mr. Boggs, I want to be very respectful. I really do, because I think everybody in this room has a common goal. I am confident that the... Mr. Anderson or Dr. Anderson and others have a very sound plan in place that has been replicated in the livestock industry as far as monitoring, surveillance, record keeping, eradication if you need be, because that has taken place with pseudorabies, for instance, and in some other activity here in the state of Minnesota. I'm not as confident or comfortable that the DNR has a plan in place in the event this would take place in the wild. And so maybe our focus should be spending more time addressing that scenario versus what's going on a farm. Just a comment. And again, I want to be respectful, sir.
Okay, so I'm going to change things here a little bit. We're past time. 30 seconds. Thank you, Mr. Bogus. Thank you, Dr. Anderson. Erdahl, apples.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, you have before you the Apple Accord, the agreement reached between the apple growers and the University of Minnesota.
At Camp David?
Yeah. All I want to say is that the portion of the bill or the amendment that will remain deals with the task force and going forward on that and examining the licensing procedures of the university.
And Representative Erdahl, thank you very much for your work on this. Really appreciate it. With that, good government all the time, we are adjourned.